Yeah, I'm okay with that.
Okay, I'll call it at 5:37 p.m. and then an approval of the October 19, 2021 agenda. If I have a motion,
I'll move to approve.
Christine. Second. And Carla, my pen just went out. And then I'll do the roll call vote. So Carla.
Yes.
Christy.
Yes.
And Dixie. Motion.
Yes.
Motion passes with three roll call votes. Okay. I will mention that Mr. Anderson had had some dental work done. And they had given him, and he was just in a tremendous amount of pain. They had given him some medication. So I shared that he did not have to join us this evening.
Thank you.
You're welcome. So hopefully, I know he was texting me and I kept telling him, please rest, don't worry, please rest. And so hopefully, that was about an hour ago. So hopefully he's gone to sleep and is letting his mouth recuperate at this point. Any public comment from San Bernardino?
No, no one.
No one? And El Centro, it looks like none either. So I can move on to the agenda action items. Do I have approval of the minutes for September 28 and October 5th?
I'll move to approve. Go ahead. Second.
Christy and Carla. I have a first and I have a second. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, I'm going to move right into roll call vote. Christy?
Yes.
Carla?
Yes.
And Dixie?
Yes.
Motion carries with three roll call votes. Board members, at our last, I want to say the September 28 board meeting, we had talked about our frequency of meeting, and it was proposed to increase the frequencies of our meeting. I shared that I would draft a revised board meeting schedule for the remainder of the year for you. I just kept it on Tuesdays just because it seems like that's our meeting day. And I basically went with the first Tuesday of the month and the third Tuesday of the month just to give a week or a break in between. So that was kind of my logic. November does have three meetings because of one of our financial reports that back office seems to always take up to the last minute to produce. So I just wanted to keep that one meeting later in the month there. I did leave December as dark. That was how it was in the original schedule. And then I just did the first Tuesday and the third Tuesday of, and the third Tuesday of every month.
Yeah, you have a couple where it's the fourth Tuesday, and I have a conflict there, but luckily it's not that many, so I think we're going to be okay.
Those are the interims, those state fiscal reports.
Yeah.
That I always, my goodness, they can never get it to us even then without us having to call another meeting, so I didn't want to even move it up.
Yeah, I understand. I'm just saying.
Yeah.
No, I like the schedule, the idea of having two meetings. But I have to say, if this is up for action tonight, I do hesitate to vote with, you know, without half the members here. We have three other people that I don't know for sure are in agreement, or that if they have any thoughts on it, and since it would affect them, I'm reluctant to move on it. I don't know if anyone else has any thoughts like that, or has a bead on where others are at with this. I'd love to hear what others think.
Yeah, I think you're right, Christy, because we don't know if anyone else has conflict with anything. So maybe
is it possible,
maybe Doreen, you can just email out and see if November the 2nd is okay.
Okay. So should we say that we're going to the board members are making, and I'll frame this. We're going to table the approval of the revised board meeting schedule. Does that sound good?
Yes.
Doreen, if I may offer, yeah. I know that in past board meetings that I've experienced when this came up, it was actually a board action to table the issue. That way the agenda item was addressed.
Yes.
Oh, so we can make a motion to table.
So we would just make a motion to table the item.
So move to table.
Okay, so I have a first and I have a second. Do I have
a second? Dixie.
Okay. Thank you. I jumped the gun on that. I'm sorry. Any discussion?
No.
Okay. Okay. So I will go for the roll call vote. Carla?
Yes.
Christy?
Yeah.
And Dixie?
Yes.
Three roll call votes. The motion passes to table the board meeting schedule. So I can survey the board members to see if they would like to meet on the 2nd. And if not, then I can bring back the revised schedule on the 16th as well. The next piece is we talked a little bit about this at our last meeting. It's part of our legal compliance. And I did go ahead and I did a resolution at this point. The resolution honestly was a template that I used from another recommended source. And that's just, again, we'll need to bring it forward every 30 days. I know we just voted on this, but an approval of our remote meetings due to being in the best interest of health and safety of everybody and maintaining distancing.
Well, I will move to approve that since we got to do it every month.
I know, right? I have a first and do I have a second?
Second.
Carla? Okay, any discussion? I will move for a roll call vote. Christy?
Yes.
Carla?
Yes.
Dixie?
Yes.
Motion passes with three roll call votes. Okay. The next one is the acceptance of Crystal Valdez's resignation, which was our board member that was just recently voted onto the board back in January. I had included an email from Ms. Valdez in your packet. I actually also reached back out to her and I shared, you know, even though it sounds like her students are transitioning from Ballington, we would still love to have her as a board member. I had not heard back. I know she did have a lot of changes going on. So actually Shannon also reached out to her and Shannon did share that she verbally asked to be to resign from the board. So at this point with her verbal request, I believe I'm bringing it to you to accept her resignation from the board.
Move to accept the resignation of Crystal Valdez.
I'll second.
I have a first and I have a second. Any discussion?
Nope.
Hearing none, I will call for the roll call vote. Carla?
Yes.
Christy?
Yeah.
And Dixie?
Yes.
Okay, motion passes with three roll call votes. And then I will move into the superintendent's report, if that is okay with the board members. I wanted to just highlight, and it served more honestly as a just updates. So I wanted to kind of give you just a one paper that you could glance at. It talked about some of the legislative updates were the executive order from Governor Newsom. He had sent out an order now that he is requesting that students are vaccinated for the COVID-19. I did go ahead and I attached the background as well as some of his language. Of course, they understand that the vaccinations are not yet approved for those ages, and they're calling for a phased in approach. We know from a while ago, he did go ahead and ask that school staff be vaccinated or weekly tested. So it seems like this is just in line with his approach. Just an FYI, I know it probably won't hit our age group for a while, but it would be something that we probably need to talk about. I know several large school districts are implementing vaccinations requirements for students. Yesterday, I believe they had a statewide protest. We had quite a lot of activity on the protest in San Diego. I understand probably, I didn't hear a whole lot from Bill that Imperial partaked a lot in it, or in San Bernardino didn't seem, but I do know in San Diego, we had a lot of parents protest this. So it's just one of those things that we probably should watch and keep our eye out on. I know lots of moving parts and probably a lot of different viewpoints on that one. The next one was just some modifications to the lengthy budget trailer bill. This specifically talks about independent study and really the impact of COVID on ADA. And I know later on in the board meeting, we will talk about that because it's not only impacting our ADA, but also our enrollment. I talked a little bit about our financials. We're currently revising the initial budgets because there was so much changes since May to reflect all of the one-time funding, and we will present a updated, I want to say, scenarios for both schools to the board hopefully in the next month. Just FYI, cash flow is becoming extremely tight. This is kind of the time of the year, even though we don't have, I want to say, deferrals. We're finding that the state isn't paying as quickly, even according to their own schedule. So we're watching for both El Centro and San Bernardino, just cash flow very, very closely at this point. One thing that's a little bit different from us is we no longer have that line of credit from Southwest. And Southwest, I don't think, is as willing, well, they're not in a position, I'll frame it as that, you know, to really step in and do a whole lot of covering for us like they have in the past. So I did put in here, and I know that this could be maybe a topic for another meeting, but just considering a line of credit again, just for CEDC, just, you know, as a contingency at some point. I'm not sure if they'd even grant us one, honestly, but I think definitely having some alternative or some different strategy in case cash flows continues to be significantly tight, which I think it will be.
So how much are you going to apply for?
I haven't, honestly, Carl, I haven't even done the analysis yet. I just really wanted to talk with you. I know our last one, I believe, was 800,000. And that at one point, I think we used it all, quite honestly. So I want to do some analysis to determine, you know, really the right amount and if that's the best strategy. I'd love to get some thoughts on that.
I can't remember the last time we had it, but did we have a backing for VOA too when we got the credit?
we did. We had 100% their backing. So that's my little bit of my concern too.
Yeah, I don't think we're going to get 800,000 with the numbers we have just by itself.
No. I'm just even hoping that they would consider even just a small amount for us. Just because I feel like right now we have nothing, right? Like there's nothing. And I'm hopeful that, you know, Southwest would not, I want to say, leave us out there. At the same time, I know we're trying to be a little more independent. So we probably need to consider that as well.
Oh, I mean, it would be great if we could get a line of credit so we have, you know, backup for it in case we really need it. And we know, especially in the summertime, we really need it.
Yeah. Yes. Definitely. And I feel like, you know, of course, the state presents their payment schedules. At the same time, sometimes they're late and you know, what are you going to do with the state, right? You're almost at their mercy.
Yeah. Well, we know every school has that same problem, you know, so.
Exactly.
So hopefully the bank will be lenient.
And I feel, and I know that Gerald has shared this before in the past when we've run into somewhat of difficulties. The funding is, knock on wood, secure, right? It's state. So the payments will eventually come. It's just a matter of them being delayed and not aligning to when we need the dollars for expenses.
Yeah, well, maybe we can do something, and especially with the accounts receivable that we're going to get from the state, maybe we can do some there, even though it's going to cost a little bit more money. But you can work on it and see what you can come up with.
Sounds good. I just wanted to bring it to the board's attention, just as we probably need to think about contingencies.
That's good.
Okay. And then just a note, I know we've struggled with back office. I did just want to share, and I know later on in our discussion, I put in a place of potential back office process for transition. I did want to just share that we have implemented, with hopes of increasing communication, bi-monthly meetings, with all the principals. Sometimes VOA Southwest staff joins because there is still the inner department or the inner company items, such as the insurance and health benefits and such. So sometimes they do join us, and that's been helpful. We're also implementing, I'm going to do an additional monthly meeting with them as well, just at an attempt to even increase communication even more going forward. Just hoping that strategy addresses some of the issues. I did put a little bit of our Southwest updates. They have reconstituted their board of directors. So they have a new board, so to speak. That said, board members, a lot of the representation is from the national office. So I want to just be clear with that. Miss, and I'm not ever going to now pronounce her name correctly, Miss Bananiski still remains CEO. Miss Alvarez still remains CFO. Miss Alvarez, actually, Linda Alvarez is the one when Southwest attends, will attend the back office meetings. I just wanted to give you a heads up. They too have secured a third party to manage all their accounting systems. And it's a company in the East, on the East Coast. They are no longer doing their payroll either. They've transitioned out their payroll to third parties. They've transitioned out all of their AP. So they do not, they very rarely, I think they'll cut a manual check in an emergency, but for the most part, they rely on this third party back office to process everything for them. We are also trying to, talking about the line of credit, Southwest did pay down our line of credit and some of our debt owed, and I'm attempting to develop a payment plan for both schools so that we have an identified amount that is owed, and then we can work out a payment plan so then we can track that and hopefully be under that be a resolved and no longer under that, I want to say debt for us. I had sent out a one-way communication on pending litigation. This was actually a case from a while ago and we talked about it. They actually served us and then it seemed like, I don't know if it was COVID or knock on wood or anyway, the case seemed to not come in, continue. We did get notice last week that they are re-upping the case. We had, since it actually was referred initially to our insurance with Southwest, because they handle all of our insurance and risk and management, we have referred them this case again back to the insurance and they're currently looking into that. And I will give you an update as soon as I receive it. Lastly,
do you have any idea what the prognosis will be?
In my opinion, will I think the parent will ask for a settlement. I think she'll ask for a certain dollar amount at this point. And then I think the insurance, of course, will go back and forth and hopefully will end on an amount.
So you think insurance is enough to cover that?
I'm hopeful. I want to say the initial amount when they initially sued, it appeared that it could cover it. And I'm hoping that that's in line with the same amount when they initially brought it. It's the same attorney. Seems like they just re-up the case again for some reason.
Thank you.
And then the board training, I had included the possibility. If you're interested, please let me know. They are having it's actually virtual as well as on site. A charter school company puts on an annual training with it. It's actually a good training. They do, you know, different sessions on like charter school one-on-one that talks a lot about charter schools. They talk about charter school finance. They talk about governance roles for charter schools and governing boards. A lot of different, then of course, the educational side of, you know, what best practices is with student academics, legal updates. So if you are interested, board members, let me know, even if you could only attend virtually or even just for some of the time, and I'd be more than happy to sign you up. Shannon has signed up, she also has signed me up, thank you. So again, we've gone to it in the past. It's quite informative. I think they do a good job of presenting the key topics. I'm also working on getting us, I know we've done it before, but I think it's good to have it done again. Brown Act training, as well as some fiscal high level training for the board members. So I'm just waiting on my contacts to confirm that. And I've asked them to do it virtually for everybody as well.
Can you send us the link with the choices of what we can sign on for?
Sure.
It's the same as what we had before, right?
Yes, yes, yes. But I'll send it to you again. This one might be updated.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome. And that was all for my report. I can't. Any questions?
The teachers at both schools, are they still doing the weekly testing, or did they get
both Mr. Anderson and I are keeping, you know, we have our own systems, but we're keeping track of who was vaccinated. And I know for San Bernardino, it's everybody except two. And so that's pretty easy to keep track of. And so I've been working with each teacher and they text me their results, usually every Monday afternoon, after evening, Monday evening. And then I have a spreadsheet that both Doreen and our human resources department has access to. And every week I add to that. And I know Bill does something similar, maybe not exactly the same, but very similar.
And he too has very minimal, I think 100% actually of all of his teachers are vaccinated. I believe a couple non-teaching staff are not. I believe once the process was implemented, those that did not want to get vaccinated or weren't vaccinated at the time, I think after the first weekly testing and the requirement to go, they changed their mind and decided to begin the process.
Okay. Yeah, because we talked about it before and there was only one at our central school that wasn't vaccinated. So at least that's what it was back then. So
yeah. I know the one teaching staff decided to do it. So his again, after it was implemented, I think that pushed her to do it, or him to do it.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Well, the training schedule you were talking about that I wanted, is that the one that you have at the end with the conference?
Yes, there were two. I'm wanting to get the Brown Act training and DISCL training for the board and like a board meeting just for this board to be facilitated. And then in addition to that, there's that conference availability. If you are interested in going, let me know. You can go in person or virtually.
I was just looking this up. It's pretty expensive. Is there funding for that, or are we supposed to pay for it?
There is funding. The schools have funding for the training, especially for because they cover certain, like fiscal training and governing board training, and as well as updates legally for charters and what's a charter.
Yeah, because I was interested, but then it's like, that seems like a lot. And are we
how much is it?
So Jenna, if we register by the 5th, then it depends on if you're a group of four or more, then it's cheaper. And then if you're a member, and are we a CSDC members?
We are a member.
It's $575 for an individual member. And it's, if you got four or more, it's $495. But what I think is funny is they don't have a different rate for virtual as in person. It's the same price.
I know, right?
I thought that was really weird. I'm like, well, let's just all go then.
I know, right?
You know, actually, Shannon, it's not really that. It's not expensive compared to other conferences. It's like we'll pay between $1,500 and $2,000 for a two-day conference.
That's actually what I was going to mention as well. I think that we've built the cost of the conferences into the budget every year because it is the professional development for both Mr. Anderson and I as well, both this conference and another one in the spring. And Carla's right. This is not, when you compare it to other conferences, both in education and other industries, it's not really expensive.
This is what I pay for Curriculum Institute for the state. And they like, that's the registration and the food. you know, everything except the hotel, right? Mm-hmm. That's why I thought that was like kind of pricey.
It's the information, and I feel like the resources they provide you are really solid. I mean, you'll walk away with very good, I want to say, PowerPoint, webinars, resources, accesses to resources. The presenters are very knowledgeable. I will share with you, there is, as Shannon had mentioned, we do build into the budget every year dollars for training and professional development that are essentially restricted towards training and professional development. So again, this is a really good conference. It also gives you an opportunity. I don't know how much if it's virtual, but if you're in person, to talk with other board members and just to network with other schools, which I know in the past has been very helpful on just solving some, you know, difficult situations, or just
sure,
having people go through it with you, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And this, that's particular... one of the aspects that I was, that really appealed to me about it, because I'm not in the education industry on a day-to-day basis. So that's one thing that was really appealing to me.
And this particular conference, the, for lack of a better word, owner, CEO of CSDC, he is very, very knowledgeable. Almost to the point of drives you crazy. He's so smart. And while I probably wouldn't want to, you know, have any social encounters with him, he's absolutely fascinating to listen to, because he has so much knowledge in his head, and he shares it very clearly and very concisely and very directly. So he's a really, really smart, knowledgeable guy. This whole conference is filled with a lot of that level of detail and information.
He is intense. I will share with you, I've had an opportunity to attend some of his conferences. I also, interestingly enough, and this is years ago, we received funding. It's that charter school facility funding, and there's certain requirements of it. And I always talk about it because we always budget one thing, and then the state says, oh, we only have a finite pot. It's SB 740. And a lot of charter schools have applied, so we're reducing the amount that we said that we were going to give you. So this is your amount for the year. And one year, Carla, you might remember this too. They have set the threshold for which schools are eligible for it. And we were in contention, actually, because I'm just going to say this off the top of my head. You had to be 71% free and reduced to be eligible for the funding. And at this point, it was for our Alcentra school. And it was a lot of dollars for us. It was like over $200,000, which is a lot for us. And at that point, our free reduced lunch rate came in, I want to say, at 70.8%. So I argued that we should be eligible, because in a normal, anyone would round up, right? Anyone would round up, but we hit 71%, and that it was very, you know, critical to the school. So long story short, I had to go to Sacramento to argue our case up to the funder. We ultimately won. I will share with you, this gentleman that is putting on this conference was at our hearing and stepped up and spoke on behalf of Ballington and how important this funding was to us, and how it would essentially cripple the school if we didn't get the dollars. So he definitely is well connected with Sacramento. He's well connected with the charter school industry, and is extremely passionate about charters. And I think that comes through in all of his and all of his presentations, in addition to, as Shannon shared, his knowledge. Of the industry.
Now I want to meet him.
I know. He's intense. He's intense.
Super interesting, though.
Yes, yes.
He's intense and very direct, but he's an interesting guy.
He is. He is. He definitely, he definitely, but again, just committed to the charter school movement. Ultimately, if you are interested, let me know and I can sign you up, whether it's virtual or in person. Again, I think a very good opportunity. And with that said, I will transition to the principal's report. I'll give you a really quick one for Bill. Their focus has really been on learning loss. They have done a lot of assessments, and then through the results of those assessments, identifying students into their different intervention strategies. And those have all begun ultimately, and we'll probably talk more about it in the board later on in the board. I think a lot of concerns are around enrollment in ADA and being significantly low in both at this point. I'll transition now to Shannon. I know I didn't do Bill's.
That was the Bill's quickest report. Central yes. report we've ever had.
Yes. I know. I'm sorry.
I will try to be equally brief. Just like El Centro, we're focusing on learning loss and using multiple assessments to identify students that do need that intervention. And intervention has definitely started. Ms. Pendry is doing both push in more for the younger students and then pull out more for the older students. It's not completely 100% like that, but in general. We did a needs assessment and we decided, and we spoke to Doreen about it as well, we decided to step away from the core curriculum and the supplemental curriculums for our K through two students because they were so significantly behind, they couldn't even do the beginning steps of the curriculum. So we pulled up a program called Zoophonics, and in just 2 weeks, we've seen 30% of the kindergarten students move up a full level, which is kind of a big deal. So that was a good call, I think. And I want to thank Doreen for giving her approval on that. And then we are also implemented our partnership with South Coast, and Mr. Lamont is coming once a week and doing group sessions to help with social skills and resiliency. And along with that, we started using the same curriculum that Mr. Anderson is using. It's called Second Step, and it's our social emotional curriculum. And that's being done every morning during their morning meeting time. And just some more basic school procedures. We stepped back a little bit and kind of went back to square one with, you know, how to line up and how to walk through the hallways and things along those lines. And I think that all those social emotional pieces together, we're starting to see a little bit of a difference. And if there's, I mean, I know that my written report was much longer than that. So if there's anything the board would like me to expand on, I'm happy to.
I just find it amazing how impactful the time off, or not time off, but the COVID changes. I'm just stunned at the effect that it's had on the kids.
It's,
I mean, I knew it would be an effect.
Yeah.
It's astronomical.
It's what we're seeing is the academic losses can be addressed pretty mm-hmm. quickly because kids are still sponges, you know, yeah. But the social emotional piece, that's what's holding everything back. And I was reading a couple articles over the last few weeks. Not only did they not have the social training that they get when they're in a classroom, because that's really what it is. It's teaching them how to be a member of a community. Not only did they not have that, but so many of them, both for school and recreation, they were just handed a screen. So there wasn't any of that, that training or play or practice that, you know, your kindergarten and first grade students are supposed to have. So that's where we're seeing the biggest gaps. And Christy, you aren't wrong. It's a huge, huge gap.
Are you seeing any increase, like an outburst in anger and frustration with the kids?
No. You know what? We were just talking about that, because usually in a typical year, we do. Almost every year. I mean, Doreen can tell you, every year we've got this email going back and forth about the small handful of kids that throw chairs or, you know, make threats or things like that, because they don't know how to operate. And I'm not a sociologist by any means, but my guess is that because everybody is at the same level socially, it's not triggering that sense of everybody else is doing it and I can't, which accelerates that frustration and that anger, and they don't know how to get it out. So we have not seen the outbursts. We've seen a lot of hitting, and not hitting like I want to hurt you, but hitting in that they don't understand that there's other human beings within, you know, hitting distance.
Right.
So we're seeing a lot of that. So, but that, at the end of the day, that's not so hard to deal with and to work with. And like I said, we're seeing these social emotional things that we're implementing. We're seeing them work a little bit at a time.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you.
No other questions?
Nope.
Okay.
Should I transition on to board discussion items?
Actually, Doreen, can I go back and say one more thing, please? I'm so sorry.
That's okay.
I want to thank Carla, and forgive me, I can't remember if it was Lily or Dixie that emailed with the offer of the candy for the trunk or treat.
And
so I want to thank you for that, and we're very grateful. But board members, we are having our mostly annual trunk or treat event. It's outdoors, and again, you're invited, and if you can't attend, we'll happily accept candy donations or just happy thoughts, and we'll send happy pictures. It really is a fun time, and I already invited the county employees in the building next door, and they were just so happy to see the flyer and that we're doing it again, and they talked about maybe going into their parking lot and decorating their cars, and so the kids would have another area to walk through, and so everyone's looking forward to it.
I will be there, Shannon. I'm looking forward to it.
I'm so happy to hear that, Christy.
It'll be fun.
Should I transition?
Yes, I'm sorry, Doreen. That was, I just wanted to mention that.
That was important. That's funner than the next topics, I think. So at one of our meetings, I think it was September 28th, we had talked a lot about really our whole back office and our challenges with back office and the process to begin potentially looking for a new back office. We had approved them for a 1-year contract going into this year. They wanted us to do 3. I pushed back. I said, no, we're only going to do 1 at this point for just several reasons, just performance, lack of accuracy, lack of timeliness. Sometimes, and it might be just me, I feel like they're a little bit rude in communications back and forth. But that I might just be.
It's not just you.
Okay.
No, it's not just you.
Yeah. Sometimes I'm at one point, I'll give an example. You know, we're working with our independent auditor, and he had, I can't even remember the detail. Anyway, he had asked for something and they had responded in not so nice of a manner. So I did respond back to just the back office person and said, you know, I'm hoping we can treat our independent auditors a little more kinder in the future. So it's just those types of things. Ultimately, I didn't want to change back offices at the beginning of this year because we were already going through so much change. Hopefully, if we put in a good process, then we could make the leap going into next school year. So I had provided in your board packet a possible process, and I would really love to have participation from board members. And I know we have to be careful because of Brown Act, where a majority cannot be meeting or on a committee without triggering Brown Act. So as long as we stay under our quorum numbers, I believe we're okay. Ultimately, I did try to put a timeline together, establishing a committee coming up right into this month, then developing or what we need from basically a scope of work, securing quotes, and then evaluating the quotes, interviewing, and then ultimately coming up with a recommendation out of the back office committee and presenting that to a board. I try to allow some time for finalizing the contract. I know that can go back and forth sometimes. And then also for transition, just to make sure, as with any change, I know, just to make sure our I's are dotted and our T's are crossed. So that would be my proposal at this point to begin the process for a new back office provider.
Are you thinking about somebody from San Diego?
I'm open. I know there's a few companies that do charter schools specifically. Many of them are in Los Angeles area. Some of them are even up in Sacramento area. So I'm open. I would want to reach out to the ones that know charter schools specifically, or at least school finance, because it can be so different.
Oh, definitely.
So.
So yeah, maybe if you can find some of those contacts and have them send us something to just review. Because I really don't know anybody here. Or do you know anything, Dixie? No? So yeah, maybe you can do that, Doreen. I don't know Shannon or Bill know anybody.
Sure, I know Bill has recommended ICOE. So I can look into ICOE. I would want only one back office provider for both schools, if that makes sense. I don't want us to be juggling through having one for San Bernardino and one for El Centro. I'm not sure if they'd be willing to do.
I can definitely talk to Todd Fennell. He's in my Rotary Club.
Oh, good, good. Yeah, that could be an option. I don't know if they're open to it or not. I know they're not a back office per se, but they are county.
And Doreen, I have some thoughts as well. I'm happy to be on that committee as well.
Thank you.
I know. I do know some actual private companies that would be able to handle both schools.
Perfect. Perfect. Good. That. So I will start with that. We'll identify a list of potential contacts, and then so that we can move that process along. And then once we have those, then we can maybe present next steps.
Great.
I know. Okay. Any other questions on back office? No.
No.
Okay. Then I will transition, if it's okay with the board members, to the next topic, and that's under enrollment for both El Centro and San Bernardino. I'm going to start with San Bernardino. I feel like that's perhaps a more simplistic discussion, if I may. Albeit San Bernardino, their enrollment is right on, honestly. per budget. They budgeted 174. They're at 173 and they go back and forth. So they're about one off. I believe their concern obviously is in their ADA. They're down a little bit in ADA, and basically that's all related to the pandemic at this point. If I may, so at this point, I know, and I always just use it as a rough, you know, one ADA is worth about $10,000. So in your mind, you can think like, okay, so their ADA is down 7, so about $70,000. Shannon and I have spoke about it and are watching expenses, you know, extremely closely. We identified potential savings and not bringing on the additional interventionist, as well as not bringing on a nutritional aide. So that should mitigate the impact of the ADA in San Bernardino. And I think, Shannon, your enrollment, I know it's fluctuated a little bit, but for the most part, I think it's been holding its own about at 170.
I think that the kiddos who were going to leave have left for their various reasons. But at the same time, they are trickling in at the kinder level. You can see on that chart that our youngest class at 19 and our oldest class at 14 are the ones with the most space. And we're seeing probably about 2 a week in that youngest class join. So it wouldn't surprise me, I can't guarantee it, but it wouldn't surprise me if we were closer to 180 by Christmas time, if we're following the same trend. And just as families go back to work, we're seeing kindergartners come in.
And maybe families getting more comfortable as well.
Yeah. Right? Yes, that's very true as well.
And I know that, you know, historically we had spoke about, you know, our maximum class size is 25. How low do we want to go? And this always comes out, you know, during the summer when we might have 10 children for one grade. Do we open up another grade? Do we not open up another grade? Where's kind of the spot that we should open up another room, another grade? And historically we've centered around about 18 students in a classroom to really be, beneficial to have open. I know the fifth grade has 14 students. I know Shannon and I talked, we couldn't merge them anywhere. You can see, you know, 3 to 4 has already got 23, 4 you got 24. So in that case, I think with the fifth grade in San Bernardino's class, we just have 14. I think the positive in that respect is a lot of one-on-one for the learning loss.
And what I can tell you about that fifth grade room, they're doing this big project, and I'm sorry, it's off topic a little bit. Big project with the government understanding the three branches. And this week I was sworn in as the Supreme Court Justice of Ballington.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you.
That's lofty.
Serene, doesn't our policies and procedures, we can have up to 25 in a class?
Correct. 25 is our maximum amount that aligns with our charter. So In San Bernardino, we, you know, of course, when you say 25 divided by X number, you come up with the number of teachers, which I know mathematically it's not always the case just because of the configuration of the grades. I think in San Bernardino, we're going to be okay with the reduction of the interventionists and the nutritional aid. I don't see anywhere where we could release or reduce any of the general education teachers at this point. But I will entertain any questions. I know when we get to El Centro, that's probably a larger discussion.
So what grade are you up to now, Shannon?
To fifth. Our charter stops at fifth grade. I know Bill's stops at sixth grade, but ours is at fifth.
Okay.
We learned through the implementation of TK through six in El Centro that we probably a better approach is to do TK through five. We found that based on curriculum, based on student needs, it worked out better to do through five. So when those were one of the lessons learned when we rewrote our San Bernardino charter, that we only went up to five at that point. And I know being around for some of the seventh, eighth grade discussions, all of those scenarios probably taken into play as well. If no other questions for San Bernardino, I can transition to El Centro. And this is where, again, based on the numbers, there's a significant a reduction. We budgeted 282. We're currently at 212. That's just enrollment alone. Then when you look at ADA, we're significantly down in ADA as well. And ADA is what they actually pay us on ultimately. So looking at this, I had put in place a chart of all the grades and the number of students in each grade. As you can see, and this probably aligns a little bit with our discussion at our last board meeting with our TK and our kinder, you can see the TK has seven, kinder has 11. Our third grade is 14 and 13. Our fifth and our sixth are 14 and 14. Another first grade is at 14. So many of our grades at this point are operating on significantly low students. In El Centro, we also agreed not to bring on another interventionist to mitigate some of the loss in enrollment in ADA, as well as tabled bringing on additional nutritional aides. At the same time, I don't think that's going to be enough to mitigate the significant loss in enrollment and ADA in El Centro. Again, if we're looking at about 10,000 per student, the loss for ADA is almost $1 million. For enrollment, at 700,000. I do want to preface that we have gotten one-time funding for the government, all of the ESSER $3 and such. That variance is still even more than that one-time funding. So that's when we looked at, when Bill and I looked at the enrollment as well as the ADA, and the ADA tends to be dropping more and more each month. We knew we needed to probably act and make a change in some of the staffing. So we had proposed, and Bill, and he's the first to say, he doesn't like combo classes. So this was a big step for him in recognizing that, honestly, that we might have to entertain some combo classes. So we're proposing to collapse TK and K, which works out. That's 18, I'm sorry, not 19, which works out in relationship to our other discussion at our last meeting. We had agreed to release the TK teacher, and I know that it was controversial with the union and all. At this point, after talking to the attorney, he noted that because we could potentially have multiple layoffs, layoff would probably be a much better route to go. So that would work out better for the school ultimately. We also are proposing to collapse our kinder in our first grade to bring up a K-1 to 23 students. Then we would have a standalone first grade, a standalone second grade, a standalone third grade, a combination third and fourth, a standalone, San Bernardino, I apologize. A standalone, we'd have two fourth grades, a standalone fifth, a combo fifth and sixth, and then ultimately a sixth grade, standalone sixth grade. I did note the division of the students or the configuration of the students will be based on really their intervention needs. So these numbers could fluctuate a little bit once they really look at MAP scores or put in place the plan. Ultimately, we're down to 212 students. Currently, we were budgeted for 282 students with 14 general education teachers. With 212 students, we would be recommending having 10 general education teachers. So a reduction of 4 teachers at this point. And that is purely based on enrollment in ADA and the significant amount of difference between what we had initially budgeted.
So is that the COVID that caused this, or is that all the other explanations?
I believe the majority is the pandemic. Again, we normally have 2 kindergarten classrooms full, a full transitional kindergarten classroom. And then even in our third grade, we tend to be close to full in our third grade. I know talking with Mr. Anderson, a lot of the kindergarten parents are much like in San Bernardino, are not sending their children to school at this point. Word came out about the vaccination. He received some calls from some parents saying that they were just going to homeschool at this point because they didn't support this, even though we haven't even put it in place at this level. So I think there's multiple factors with that. Primarily, I want to say pandemic related. For the majority of the under enrollment. And then the ADA, is just children. We've had to close a couple classrooms at this point. That's truly pandemic related, truly. Because when one child is positive, you're closing down the whole school, not the whole school, the whole class.
So if we are collapsing some of the classes, what are the parents gonna say?
I believe we would need to frame the communication that, based on our numbers in our classrooms, we are going to have to collapse. I think it will eventually lead itself to consistency. I think having a class of 11 is also sometimes a challenge for a teacher as well, not having more students to teach to class of 13. I think that definitely could be a positive that we would share with the parents. I think with anything, it's definitely going to be about communication and sharing where we're at. I know some parents might not be 100% in support initially.
Yeah, I don't think the problem is too big on TK and K. I think it's maybe some of the other ones that, like the fifth graders, or the sixth graders, if you collapse those, they'll maybe complain about why are we having a fifth and a sixth grade. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Yeah. I believe what will be key is the configuration, and I want to say grouping them by their needs at that point. So a fifth grader might be stronger in one area, and then grouping them with other fifth graders that have those same needs. I know that will be all driven by their assessment scores.
Okay, so when you put them together, how are you going to do the testing? Is it just going to be based on one level then, or
It would be based on where their individual grade is. Did I answer that question correctly?
Well, let's say, you know, you are in sixth grade right now and you're collapsing it with a fifth grade. So is the sixth grader now going to be a fifth grader?
No, they would still be a sixth grader and they would be tested based on their sixth grade information.
Okay.
Yep. So a little bit
more work for the teacher then, huh?
A little bit. They would be differentiating the different lessons to align to the different grades. Shannon, do you want to speak a little bit about, I know you've had classes.
Yeah. Something interesting, I'm sure you all remember back in 2014 when California first adopted the Common Core standards, there was a lot of controversy. I like them, but one of the good things that everyone can agree on is the standards are pretty much aligned through all the grades. So you'll see this pretty much the same type of standard, in some cases, even the exact same standard between like third grade and fourth grade or fourth grade and fifth grade. And the expectation is just a deeper mastery of that particular standard for the next grade level. And so while teaching a combo class is a challenge, those standards make it just a touch easier than it used to be, because they can still focus on the same standard and then provide differentiation activities with regards to the depth of that standard. And there might be sometimes in a given week, you have a group of fifth graders that are working at a sixth grade level because they just understand that particular standard. And maybe there's another standard where the sixth graders need to work at a fifth grade level, just based on their understanding of that standard. So it's a challenge, but it's also one that I've seen teachers take on with gusto, because it really does go to that skill of differentiating.
Yeah, I mean, I thank you. I mean, I can totally see financially, you know, we have to do something.
We've had combo classes at San Bernardino since we opened. You know, because we spent the last 5 years growing our enrollment, and teachers, I think they're a little bit nervous about it, and I wouldn't give it to a first year teacher. But once they're in 2 or 3 weeks, they're good with it. And it works. It's, you know, like Mr. Anderson, it's not my first choice, but it's my second. You know, it's not my last choice.
It helps with your intervention programs as well, because I know students are divided and into intervention groups according to their skills as well.
That's very true.
So this is recorded. The recording, where does that go? Who can access it?
We post it on our website at this point, because we're meeting remotely, and because we're as one of the stipulations that we're meeting remotely, but because we're in different counties, charter schools that have board members in different counties, we post all of our recordings on our website.
So that means the parents will hear about it pretty quick then.
If a decision is made at this point, yes. We haven't identified who, I want to say it.
Yeah, in that case, I suggest maybe you and Shannon and Bill really decide which one you want to pull together and maybe bring it up at next meeting to explain exactly what you want to do. Oh, this is just a board discussion, right?
It is a board discussion. Yes, yes. I just wanted to bring it to the board's attention that we knew that we had under enrollment as well as ADA, and we probably needed to put a strategy in place to address that.
Okay. Okay.
No, that's okay.
I do want to reassure the board a little bit. There is a tremendous teacher shortage in the state of California, and through being laid off, it doesn't impact reputation in the least. And I'm very confident that any teacher that loses their job through a layoff like this will land on their feet in about a day and a half. I mean, they're going to get picked up very quickly.
Good. Well, I have no other comments or questions.
Doreen, I noticed that on the proposed configuration, you have, I'm not sure if this is the, if there's a different copy or anything, but if you scroll down, I thought you could only have 25.
We can only have 25. Do I have more?
There's 30. So if you scroll down on that screen right here that you have it. Where you have the, see, so what's showing on the screen is the current configuration.
Right. If you go, oh, yes. I think it should be 25. My apologies.
And then, so you're going TKK, right? You're combining TKK. Yes. And then this would just be first grade at 25 then?
So it would be TKK and then K to one.
What K?
Kindergarten. We had a couple.
Oh, okay, you had more. Okay.
Yeah, we had a couple extra kindergartners that we couldn't put into our TKK, so we would move them into our K1. Thank you for catching that. I was counting when I was pulling them into different places. Any other comments, discussions?
Nope.
Should we move to the next topic?
Sure.
Sounds good.
Okay. So every October, we begin to talk about board officer selection process. So I just wanted to put it out there. I know Carlo, you and I've worked on it with one another. I think Denise has helped us with it. I think one time Elizabeth even was part of it. I just wanted to talk to the board about how do you want to move forward on that, or do we?
Well, Dixie, you want to be involved? It's okay if you don't, we will still ask you and stuff if what you might be interested in.
What does it entail?
Just basically deciding who's going to be the chair and secretary and treasurer and.
Okay.
So historically, Carla, I believe we just recommended a slate at the next board meeting.
Yes.
Is that the process we would still like to do going forward?
Yeah, we can do that.
Okay. And I will work with, it sounds like Carla and Dixie?
Sounds like it.
Okay. All right. And then the next piece. I think that's all for topics. Any board closing comments?
Not from me. Anyone else?
Nope. Well, I hope you guys are going to have a great Halloween party with everybody.
Thank you.
Trunk or treat.
Okay. All right. So then if there are no additional comments, then we can officially end the meeting at 6:53 today.
Thank you so much, Doreen, and thanks everybody else.
You're welcome.
Thank you, everyone. Have a wonderful evening.
Bye, everyone.
You too. Thank you.
Bye-bye.